Alaska consistently ranks at or near the top for sexual assault and crimes against women and children. This despite numerous targeted efforts to try to lower those rates by advocacy organizations and state agencies. I'm Lori Townsend. And access to online media is everywhere, in our homes, businesses, schools, and through portable devices. How can we keep our kids safe in an age of constant communication? What's being done to try to address the risk of young people getting trapped in sex trafficking? We'll be talking about the risks of life on the street, and we'll be taking your calls today on Talk of Alaska Statewide.
Today's program is underwritten in part by
BP, supporting public broadcasting in Alaska.
When you've made the decision to stop smoking, whether you've tried to quit before or it's the very first time, there are free and confidential resources available proven successful in helping you quit for good. Alaska's Tobacco Quit Line offers nicotine replacement therapy, confidential counseling, and support services. Because everyone is different, trained quit coaches will tailor a quit plan just for you. For more information, call 1-800-QUIT-NOW or visit alaskaquitline.com.
The views expressed on this program are those of the participants and not necessarily those of APRN, this station, or its underwriters.
Good morning and welcome to Talk of Alaska. I'm Lori Townsend, sitting in for Steve Heimel. Today we're going to be talking about a sensitive and for some painful topic, sex trafficking and internet predators. If you have a story or a family member who has been victimized by these crimes, or you have a question, you can call us at 550-8422 in the Anchorage area, 550-8422, or if you're outside around the state, you can reach us at 1-800-478-8255, 1-800-478-8255, or talk. My guests today are Glenn Klinkhart. He's a former APD, Anchorage Police Department detective, and the man who helped launch the cyber crimes unit of APD. Glenn is now the CEO and co-owner, is that right, Glenn, of Digital Securus?
That's correct.
And that's an internet systems security company. Also, Sergeant Kathy Lacey, who is it Detective Sergeant? Is that your title?
Yes, officially, yes.
Yes, Sergeant.
Sergeant works, though.
Okay, Sergeant Lacey is the Detective Sergeant of the APD's Vice Unit, or under, is it appropriate to call it the Undercover Unit?
Just the Vice Unit is how we refer to ourselves.
All right. Well, some people may think sex trafficking is a problem in faraway places, New York or Los Angeles, big urban centers. But my guests and some Alaskans know that this isn't the case. Sex trafficking is real. It's happening in Alaska and harming young people and families here. I sort of want to break the discussion into two parts today. First, where we are currently and how that has changed since the cyber crimes unit got started and the vice units. And then we'll talk about why it's happening here and why it's been so difficult for so many decades, really, to bring those numbers down. So, Glenn, let's start with the cyber crimes unit and when that really got started and how that came to be.
Well, interesting enough, when I joined the police force, which was in 1995, there was no computer crime unit. However, I'll never forget when I was actually in police academy, sitting there trying to learn the trade, trying to figure out what it was I was supposed to know, I heard about the first, they actually told us about a gentleman who apparently met a girl online, and he actually convinced her to meet him at the LUSAC library, and they ultimately caught him after sexually assaulting the young lady. And that was probably the first time I thought to myself, with my computer background now joining law enforcement, was there a way to make these two things kind of connect? And in the late 90s, one of the things that I noticed as I was, again, trying to learn the craft of police work was that law enforcement doesn't change rapidly. It kind of takes them a little while to kind of get with the program. And yet, at the same time, I would venture into the Crimes Against Children Unit. And those folks were more than happy to help me. You know, they didn't treat me like I had only been on 5 minutes like I had, but wanted to know, you know, what was this computer stuff. They were finding there were computers when kids were coming forward and they were going into these homes and they were searching and they were arresting some of these guys, they had computers. So for me, it was an opportunity to use something that I had experience with and kind of trade information. And from there, it kind of became a process of going, well, if we're going to take these computers, there has to be a process to do it correctly so we can, you know, preserve the evidence. And that was kind of the beginning of realizing, especially back then, that oftentimes these cases ended up being a he said, she said. Mm. You know, somebody comes forward, a kid comes forward and says, this person did this to me, and then the police would go interview that person, and they would say, nope, didn't happen. And so juries were kind of, you know, wanting to have something more that they could, you know, they wanted to believe one side or the other. And being able to go in there and get the evidence from computers or from the internet service provider to be able to say, yeah, this really did happen. And oftentimes one of the things that we found was that by doing that, we provided enough evidence, especially in the way of video and pictures or things that, that backed up what the victim said or would show that these people were predisposed to being sexually attracted to children, that they wouldn't even, where they used to go to trial because they had, you know, nothing to lose. Now these things weren't going to trial. They were taking responsibility for their actions, and it also prevented the victim from being re-victimized and having to go in. So this kind of just evolved in the late 90s, and luckily for me, the Anchorage Police Department was willing and able to say, yeah, let's do it. Let's try it. And we started with just parts and pieces that we would beg, borrow from other other areas. And I remember bringing in parts and pieces and building. The first computer was built out of just junk that we found, and we were able to make cases with it. And that kind of, again, trying to prove to people that, yeah, this was a valid process. And so now, some 10, 12 years later, we have a full cybercrime unit made up of multiple detectives. I think there's 5 detectives and a sergeant and part of the Internet Crimes Against Children Task Force. And so 10, 12 years ago, Anchorage Police was really one of the first in the country to have a full-time crime unit.
That seems really commendable when you think about in the early 90s how no one could have forecast what we would see today as far as ubiquitous communication systems everywhere. You know, they're in people's back pockets now. And in those days, that certainly wasn't the case at all, and no one saw that coming. 550-8422 is the number here in the Anchorage area, 550-8422. 1-800-478-8255 is the number outside of Anchorage. This is Talk of Alaska. We're talking today about sex trafficking and cyber crimes and how to keep young people safe in an age of constant communications and sometimes dangerous communications. We have a couple cases that are fairly large, looming large. One right here in the state, there's an accusation against a reporter for contacting a 14-year-old girl online and trying to arrange some kind of a get-together, I guess. And then there's this terrible situation about an East Coast cop that's accused of wanting to kill women online and allegations of other terrible crimes suggested against him. Sergeant Lacey, how long have you been doing this type of work, this vice undercover work, and how has that changed in the time that you have?
Well, I started in 1994 with the Anchorage Police Department, and I was on patrol, and it seemed like I gravitated towards prostitution, street crime, street drugs when I was on patrol, and that's been most of my career. I was in the special assignment unit when it was a patrol unit, and then I promoted, and I was a sergeant of that unit. Started the vice unit in 2005. So I've worked prostitution and street level drugs for most of my career at APD. And how the internet has changed everything. Internet fueled, facilitated prostitution and sex trafficking has exploded. It used to be the traditional street walking prostitute that you would see on Spinard or in Mountain View. They were quite visible. You saw them a lot. You don't see hardly any anymore because the vast majority of prostitution has gone to the internet, hotel rooms, private residences. It's just so easy. It's easy for a sex trafficker to post numerous girls on the internet for free or a nominal charge. It's easy for women to post themselves. It's just completely changed the game of sex trafficking. A trafficker, and I'll use that term trafficker pimp interchangeably, his overhead can be a cell phone and posting ads. That's pretty much it. So there's the amount of cash that's in sex trafficking is just incredible. So it has really changed. And when we first got, the Anchorage Police Department got a human trafficking grant in 2005. And I was handed this grant and said, here you go, here's a human trafficking grant. And I'm like, I don't know anything about human trafficking, and why are you giving this to me? Well, then after some training, I realized sex trafficking is prostitution. Not all prostitution falls into the legal definition of sex trafficking. But then I realized, okay, now I know why you're giving that to me, because I know prostitution. And initially, we partnered with several different agencies that we're still partnered with. The U.S. Attorney's Office, we have a close working relationship with the FBI. We have an Innocence Lost Task Force, FBI Innocence Lost Task Force, based out of the Vice Unit. Lots of NGOs, the Covenant House, Catholic Social Services, a bunch of us partnered. And the initial grant was for foreign-born victims of trafficking, because that's what everybody thought we had. And we do have that. But what we were seeing in Anchorage, on the streets of Anchorage, were the girl next door was working and being trafficked. So domestic sex trafficking was far larger than anybody had an idea of. So we kind of morphed our grant to cover domestic sex trafficking. And recently, the Obama administration has set aside money, grant money, just for domestic sex trafficking. But that's what we found. We found runaway kids being trafficked right on the streets of Anchorage. So it kind of changed the way we looked at it, and the internet changed the way that we did business. It's just incredible the amount of sexual exploitation that goes on the internet.
1-800-478-8255 is the number to call outside of Anchorage, 550-8422 if you're in the Anchorage area. And you can also send us an email, talk@alaskapublic.org. It was interesting to hear you say, Sergeant Lacey, that that prostitution has sort of moved indoors, that you're not seeing people out on the street. I mean, that makes sense, but I hadn't thought about that. So I have a couple questions about that. First, how much more difficult does that make your work when you're not seeing people? I mean,
much
if you
difficult.
See them out on the street, that's one thing. You know where they are. You know where the hot spots, the trouble spots are. But if they're indoors, I'm sure that makes it more difficult. But also, how is it that people can post what are essentially illegal advertisements online, and then somebody's just searching? How does this happen that these
people
aren't
caught easy.
Somehow?
It's very easy to post. And if you ever get on those sites, you can peruse those sites, and it's very clear that they're selling sex. They're not selling a date. They could be very graphic. They use a lot of they try to camouflage their phone numbers by putting stars and symbols in between the numbers to make it harder to search the phone number. They use a lot of acronyms for specific sex acts that they will do. It's very easy to post that. And, you know, as we all know, Craigslist came under fire years ago for that homicide in I think it was Boston. And so when Craigslist cracked down on their ads, a million other sites came up. And a lot of those sites are managed overseas, so they're not held accountable for our laws here. And it's just a matter of how they word it. They can word it to where they're not breaking the law. And those ads are prolific, and they're easy to do. I mean, anybody can post one of those ads.
You said that you found that there was a tremendous amount of domestic sex trafficking or human trafficking happening here. How do you know how Anchorage and Alaska compares in that regard to other places? Are there the grant that you had received was initially targeted for foreign-born people who were being victimized by this, but you found that it was people right here in the state. How do we compare to other places?
Well, Alaska and Anchorage in particular, we have been ahead of the curve in our investigation of sex trafficking. For such a small city, when we first did the first sex trafficking case, we started it in, I think we started it in 2003. We were one of the first states to bring a sex trafficking case, and that was against Don Webster, also known as Jerry Starr. We have so much sexual exploitation in this state. As you know, we have one of the highest rates of sex assault. And I think that we are we're probably higher than other states just because of the rate of sex assault we have, but I don't know how we compare on a national level for prostitution. It is literally everywhere. And I've said to people, it's almost as basic as if you have men and women, you're going to have prostitution. If you have prostitution, you're going to have sex trafficking. It's almost that basic.
Well, I want to talk a little bit about the connection between the urban centers in Alaska and the rural communities. But we're going to take a call first. We've got Roger from White Mountain on the line. Good morning, Roger.
Good morning. In rural and urban Alaska, what's the numbers on sex trafficking in both areas, in both arrests and convictions? I'll hang up and listen to your response. Thank you.
Thank you.
He's
leading us right into that.
He is.
leg of the conversation.
And we don't have numbers for rural Alaska. We are just completed a big case where we know that the trafficker had traveled to Western Alaska to recruit. Beyond that, we don't know what the numbers are. What I can speak to is what I see here in Anchorage, because, of course, I'm the Anchorage Police Department. I partner with the FBI, so we have a lot of intelligence from the rural communities that this is going on. But what we see is a lot of the people coming in from rural Alaska into Anchorage and getting recruited once they get here. Numbers are hard to come by because not every prostitution case turns into a sex trafficking case. So it's difficult to give people numbers. I do know that there is recruitment going on. I know that when young women come to Anchorage from rural Alaska, that they can be propositioned here, they can be recruited here. Oftentimes it happens around big events like AFN, which the First Lady spoke about, for rendezvous, other big events that draws a lot of rural Alaskans to Anchorage, but we don't have hard numbers for a number of cases out there.
Glenn?
Yeah, one of the other things that I think we can add to that number is when we realize that Alaska per capita has more computers, more internet, and we're more connected than any other place in the United States, and we have been for the last 15 years. You know, thank goodness, you know, we have put a lot of time and energy into technology. We've got companies that have done things because of the size of our state that hadn't been done anywhere else before. We've been connected for many years. We're used to it. I mean, I know that speaking, you know, for myself, growing up in the Anchorage School District, we had Apple computers mm-hmm. way back in the 80s. And so we're plugged in more so than anywhere else. And I can tell you that when we go online and we do, for example, online stings, that oftentimes it's not uncommon at all to have people come online wanting to have sex with us if we're portraying a 15, 14-year-old girl. And they're not just from Anchorage. They're from all over the state. We do scans, and we can actually find internet protocol addresses that are all over. We're connected. And so that adds to it. I mean, again, it's tough to put numbers on it, but I can tell you that if you've got the connection, people are going to make that connection, that call.
But in an age when it's easy to track those things back, why are people still so engaged online in that activity? Because I would think that you'd be afraid to do a search of certain keywords. How is it that you come on to finding these people that are cruising for, you know?
Well, would you believe there's actually intel sites on the internet that the Johns and the pimps will actually mm-hmm. post and say, oh, you know, this person is safe, or this is a good place to go. So just as we're getting this information deluge of good information, there's information that's being traded amongst the people involved on another level. They're using blogs, they're using posts, they're using websites, they're using text messages. And so, I mean, literally there are people we've found somewhere before you come to Anchorage, you know. You can actually search and find out the people that would be more likely to give you what you want, how
exactly.
you want it, where you want it.
Where to go to find a prostitute, you know, mm. who this girl is. Oh, law enforcement is out on this corner right now.
Mm-hmm.
It's kind of mind-boggling and sort of makes your blood boil to consider these things. 550-8422 is the number locally, 1-800-478-8255, 1-800-478-8255. Talk is the number around the state. You can also reach us by email, talk@alaskapublic.org. I know that we heard some very painful stories, and if you have a story yourself that you would like to share with us about an experience or a family member's, please give us a call and let us know about that. I know that when the presentation that we referenced earlier, Sergeant Lacey, there were some, you know, just heartbreaking stories there of people who had come in, one man for AFN, and, you know, his daughter just disappeared.
Exactly.
He turned around and she was just gone. And, you know, in the crush of meeting people and friends and folks you haven't seen for a long time, and in an area where you'd think you were safe because you're surrounded by folks you know, and he lost his daughter, and it was quite a long time before they found her. And it's, you know, the kind of thing that changes lives forever, even when there's a happy outcome where your daughter or son is found and returned to the family. There's been some devastating things that have happened. How can you kind of break down for us how these traffickers actually recruit? What do they do? Do they send out young people?
They're very creative. A couple things about prostitution to remember is the average age of entry into prostitution is 14 years old, 13, 14 years old. So as a society, we tolerate prostitution. And I think most people tolerate it between adults. But when you talk about younger kids getting recruited into prostitution, and that's why I always try to bring it back to the kids, because we can't just kind of wink and say it's the world's oldest profession and look the other way. What we see typically in Alaska is more 15, 16-year-old. But our society glorifies prostitution. If you look at music videos and rap songs and the provocative clothes that you know, big department store chains sell, you know, we're sexualizing young girls earlier and earlier. And so this whole cultural acceptance of prostitution and pimping, you know, when you see some of these programs, Pimp Your Ride, This Is Pimped Out, it always refers to improving it. And so this is the message that our kids are getting, that this is cool, this is a neat thing for you to do, and then you get a pimp or a trafficker that comes along and recruits. We've had girls recruited right out of coffee shops here in Anchorage. A guy will roll up in a really nice car, and he's nicely dressed. And one trait that is pretty much uniform with traffickers is they have the gift of gab. They can talk to people like you wouldn't believe. And he'll start talking to her. They'll also use other juvenile girls to recruit. They'll, you know, go have a 16-year-old girl go up to another 15 or 16-year-old girl in a mall. Come and stay with my boyfriend. He's really nice. We've got a place to stay. Mm. You know, we'll get your hair done. We'll get your nails done. It's the whole glorification of the lifestyle. And, of course, they have no idea what they're getting into until they're actually in it.
How large a rate, or what's the percentage of young women and men trapped in this life that are addicted to drugs?
Well, we see the substance abuse addiction much more on the street prostitutes. It's very common for us to have a woman on the street be addicted. It used to be crack cocaine, now it's all heroin. That's pretty common. Almost all of them abuse alcohol and some drugs. It kind of depends on the level of prostitution. There's really like two tiers. One's the streetwalker, who most of them are hooked on some form of illegal drugs. And then there's the massage parlors, in-call, out-call escort services. Most of them have substance abuse in their past somewhere, and almost all of them have some sexual abuse in their past.
You're listening to Talk of Alaska. I'm Lori Townsend, and we're talking today about sex trafficking and cyber crimes and how to keep young people safe. 550-8422 or 1-800-478-8255 is the number to call if you'd like to join our conversation, if you have a story you'd like to share or questions to ask. We have an emailed question from Laura in Anchorage who wants to know, what are the arrests being made at massage parlors? So what's the situation with that?
We make a lot of arrests at massage parlors, and it's fairly obvious, the massage parlors. We're not talking about the legitimate massage parlors. We're talking about the strip mall massage parlors that have the darked out windows, and they're open till 2-3 o'clock in the morning. We do lots of arrests in massage parlors. A lot of them are Korean, Chinese, women that are in these massage parlors. A lot of them are on a circuit where they'll come from New York and then California and then Alaska. We'll go in and make an arrest, and the trafficker will move them out of state, and he'll bring in new women, which is...
So they just rotate through
they
states.
They rotate a lot of them around. And, and a lot of those massage parlors and those strip malls, they'll have beds in the back where the women live there. They work there 7 days a week. They have little kitchens in the back. They basically, that's all they do.
So they're essentially slaves, it sounds like.
Yes.
There's one emailed question here, and also I see one person on the phones that wants to know, they are both asking the same question, would legal prostitution prevent trafficking?
No. I can tell you no. The only tool we have right now to disrupt the trafficker's business is the fact that we can arrest the woman. And which is unfortunate because we do recognize their status as a victim, but we need to break that bond between the woman and the trafficker. And the only way that we can get her away from him is to make that arrest. And we use those arrests as tools to disrupt their business. So legalizing it is not going to help anything. It's just going to make it easier. All you're doing is making it easier for the trafficker to make money, to recruit younger girls into his business. It's difficult right now with trying to disrupt their business. There's very few departments that are even big enough to have a vice unit. Anchorage is one of the few departments, the only department in the state, that has a dedicated vice unit that looks at prostitution and sex trafficking. So it would not help it at all.
Yeah, one of the things that I'd like to add, too, with that is that we're really fortunate because what Sergeant Lacey and her people are doing is working with the feds, working with other tools in their toolbox. If it was just the Anchorage Police Department, that could be very difficult. It wasn't so bad 10, 20 years ago when they would do the on-the-street stings. But now they've gotten the Johns. I've gotten a lot smarter. They're hiding their money. They're doing things. But they can then bring in some of those federal laws and some of those federal people to go after the money, go after the people that are making the money. So it's really unique, and it's good that they're doing these things because it gives them the opportunity to stop essentially if you can stop them making the money, then you take that out of the equation and it makes it a lot easier.
We're talking today on Talk of Alaska about sex trafficking and cyber crime, cyber predators, how to keep your young people safe from being victimized by these crimes. We'll be taking your calls or your emails as Talk of Alaska continues statewide.
Talk of Alaska comes to you from APRN, the Alaska Public Radio Network, and is made possible with support from the Federal Aviation Administration setting standards for the operation of aircraft in airports, faa.gov/go/flyalaska, or toll free at 1-866-357-4704. The Kinnick Arm Bridge would create a second link between the Mat-Su and Anchorage for use during highway closures, emergencies, and as a potential evacuation route. For more facts on the Kinnick Arm Bridge, visit kinnickarmbridge.com. This message sponsored by the Kinnick Arm Bridge and Toll Authority.
Welcome back to Talk of Alaska. I'm Lori Townsend, and today we're talking about the terrible issue of sex trafficking, cybercrime, cyber predators, and the very real risks that are out there for young people. We're going to take a call from Rebecca in Sitka, who has a question about prevention. Oh, I guess we lost Rebecca. Well, hopefully she'll call back. But in the meantime, let's talk a little bit about the connection between rural Alaska and urban centers in the state. Are there efforts to train VPSOs or
Yes.
other law enforcement folks that are in rural Alaska that kind of can be the eyes and ears on the ground out there to help out in this effort?
We're actually, and that's part of the First Lady's push, we are developing a protocol for a standardized training for all law enforcement. With the Alaska State Troopers, we're going to push it out to VPSOs. My partner, Jolene Godin, with the FBI, who we're on a task force together, we've gone to Bethel a couple different times to provide training. And the idea is we want to get a training that's standardized and push it out to all of Alaska so everybody knows how to identify, possibly how to put together a trafficking case. And that's in the works right now with the Alaska State Troopers.
Yeah, and the other part of that is the Anchorage Police Department working with the Internet Crimes Against Children Task Force, which is another statewide organization. I kind of refer to it as the geeks with the guns. And teaching the officers, you know, what evidence is being held in these cell phones, in these things, and teaching them how to preserve it, how to get it, how to get the right search warrants, so that when they do move in, when they are able to make arrests, they're able to get that information they need to be able to put the person away. So it's kind of a nice two-prong approach of trying to get the evidence, trying to find the people, and work together. And the ICAC task force has done really well in training officers all around the state in how to take, preserve, and examine electronic evidence.
Now, if someone takes their smartphone and deletes videos or text messages to try to get rid of evidence, can you do forensics on smartphones like you can on computers for files that have been deleted and still recover that information?
The answer is yes, but it depends. I have to be kind of careful. I don't want to give away any trade secrets.
Certainly not. No, we don't want to help out.
But I will tell you that I have been able to recover deleted text messages and different items of interest that people have gotten rid of. In fact, we've had some folks go to some extreme lengths to try and get rid of their cell phones and their laptops, and they've done some very creative things. Again, where there's a will, there's a way. Oftentimes, I mean, I've taken burned out hard drives and destroyed laptops and things that have been underwater. And if it's important enough, we will do what we can to get that data back. And oftentimes we can. Not always. We don't live in a CSI world. But you'd be surprised some of the information that we can get back. It's not always gone. Sometimes it's in the most interesting places.
I know that, 550-8422 is the number here in the Anchorage area. 1-800-478-8255 is the number statewide. You can also reach us by email, talk@alaskapublic.org. Now, I know that the majority of these crimes are perpetrated against young women, but also young men
are
victimized as well. Is there a way to sort of talk about the differences in how, or are there differences in how the two different genders are targeted, and also what services are available for young men who get trapped in this as opposed to young women?
Well, I'll let Glenn address the internet, because in prostitution we see very few boys. In my 18 years, I think we've picked up two boys working the streets in 18 years. The vast majority of sex trafficking involving young men is done on the internet. They do not send them to people that they don't know, who aren't known clients. It's much more secretive. You have the added layer of shame about admitting that they're involved with other men, that they're gay. They may or may not be gay. There's that added layer of shame involved in that. And we don't see them very often because it's all done via the internet to only known clients. So Glenn can probably talk more about what he's seen in the predator end.
Yeah, I actually took the words right out of my mouth. It's one of those things where we know that it happens, and we believe it happens more frequently than we can actually ascertain, because, again, when we do find them, they're not really very helpful. The victims don't want to come forward. They oftentimes have a slightly different attitude towards the police. And the ones that I have seen have been strictly on the internet, and it's usually an individual who's going out and essentially prostituting, himself for reasons that are varied. Everything from exploration of sex to trying to make some money, and the internet makes it very easy for them to do that. And I can tell you from the predator's standpoint, they pick up on this, and they know that this is a way that they can find these young men and be able to get what they want. And it's all done, again, with cash, and it's done all very, very quietly, and nobody ever talks about it. And then, again, oftentimes these young men, I've had conversations with them where they don't see themselves as victims. It's something that they wanted to do, if they even will talk to you.
1-800-478-8255 is the number statewide, 550-8422. If you have a story you'd like to share or questions about this topic, Alaska, unfortunately, has the dubious distinction of being at or near the top in these statistics, and it's something that certainly all of us would like to see change. We're going to take a call now from Sarah in Chugiak, who wants to know what clergy can do to help, I guess. Sarah?
Hi, my name is Pastor Sarah, and I'm the new pastor at Alaska Native Lutheran. And I just wanted to know, this is an issue that's near and dear to my heart, and I wanted to know what clergy and congregations could do to help.
Thank you. Thanks for the call.
One of the things that I'm constantly telling people is we need to talk about this. You need to talk about it in church. You need to talk about it. You know, it's difficult for people to talk about forced sex or selling sex. It's kind of a touchy subject, but I think we need to get it out in the open. We need to talk about prostitution. We need to talk about sex trafficking. It isn't just sex between two consenting adults. It's a very exploitive relationship. If you talk to any of these women that have been involved in it, and we talk to every single one that we arrest, they have some horrific stories. They have a very dysfunctional background. And I think we need to quit just accepting it as a society that there's going to be prostitution. I think we need to just discuss it. And I think, you know, one way to start is just to raise these discussions within your own particular community.
Do you see a certain set of kind of life conditions that are common, or do people that become victimized in sex trafficking, human trafficking, come from a broad range of backgrounds? Is it just,
yes,
as you mentioned earlier, sometimes it's the girl next door? What are some of the factors that maybe we can focus on if there are some commonalities in some of the backgrounds?
Juvenile prostitution is very strongly linked to runaway status. If a kid runs away, and I'm not talking about your rebellious teenager that doesn't want to do the dishes and goes and stays with a friend for the night, but a chronic runaway that is continually running away, they're running from something at home, from some kind of abuse or dysfunction at home. They are absolutely ripe to be recruited by a sex trafficker. So with juveniles, we see the runaway link very strongly. That's a risk factor. Mm-hmm. National Center for Missing and Exploited Children has a study that within 72 hours, a juvenile will be propositioned by a trafficker because they need a place to stay. They can't rent hotel rooms. They can't rent cars. They're going to end up staying with somebody who's going to take advantage of them. As far as adults, and then if you always have to look back to realize that most adult women probably entered prostitution as a juvenile, because that's the average age of entry. They don't wake up at 21 and say, I'm going to be a prostitute. That doesn't happen. Again, it's that chaotic lifestyle. It's it's not having a place to stay. It's an abusive background. Although I have arrested a gal one time on Spinard Road when we arrested her, and I was patting her down, and she was wearing designer jeans and Dansko clogs and had a Starbucks coffee cart in her back pocket, and she was out on the street. Her parents were teachers here in Anchorage. She got hooked on heroin, and that's how she ended up on the street. So I've pretty much seen everything, but the commonalities would be that dysfunctional background.
Glenn?
Yeah, and I want to say to Sarah, thank you for talking about this, especially it's something that you don't generally hear the clergy asking about. So, you know, kudos to her for doing that. The other thing I like to talk about is when it comes to also educating our men, our young men especially, you know, and Sergeant Lacey kind of touched on this, but how our society treats and the idea of victimizing or looking at the female as property or as somebody that you can buy and purchase. And at what point did we get to that? Where was that education going on when all of a sudden we decided, hey, we're going to talk about something. Let's talk about this.
That's an excellent point.
Mm-hmm. You know, so I've had some conversations even with my son about this. And recently it came from a documentary that I saw called Misrepresentation, which I highly recommend. And I ended up showing it to him. And we talked about it in that how the media, how our society judges, looks at women, and especially women who are in power or who are in the spotlight, or really even, you know, your friends. And so we have these conversations about how do your friends talk about the girls, you know, who are in your social circle, and what words do they use, and how are they treated? That starts at a young age, and I think those are the sort of conversations that we need to have with our young men.
Absolutely. Good job, Dad. We're going to take another call here from Barbara in Delta Junction. Barbara, are you there?
I'm here.
What was your question?
My question is, I'm wondering about a safe house. Why is there not a big house somewhere these women can go to when they come out of the villages so that they can have a place to stay for as long as they need to, even for the abused women in the state of Alaska? We have the highest rate of abused women, even higher than all of the lower 48 together. I'm a 40-year Alaskan, so I know what the abuse is like. I'm not a product of it myself. I am treated like a queen. But there are so many women out there that are abused. We need a safe house. I want to know why we don't have one, and I'll take your answer offline.
Thanks, Barbara, for the call. And, of course, we do have some facilities.
Yes, we do.
I'm sure it's not nearly
Awake,
enough. But
is the primary one, and they've been they've partnered with us. They've been just fantastic about we need a bed, and they will get a bed for us. The Salvation Army currently right now is looking at that very thing, just a safe house for women to go to. Mary Magdalene House has also some facilities. There's actually a fair number of facilities. One of the needs that we have recognized is that we need a place where you can get substance abuse counseling and a safe place to stay. And, you know, they need these women that are involved in sex trafficking have so many different needs. It's very complicated.
Yeah.
But we have a lot of NGOs that have stepped up to the plate to fill that.
Let's take another call here. 1-800-478-8255 is the number statewide, or 550-8422 in the Anchorage area. You can also reach us at talk@alaskapublic.org. Dave is on the line from Anchorage. Dave, are you there?
Yes.
You have a question?
Yes, I'm confused. Sex trafficking, what's the definition of that? Is that all prostitutes, or does that just include prostitutes who have pimps? Or I can't see any differences between sex trafficking and everything else you're talking about, so I'm just wondering what the definition is, and I'll take the answer on the air.
Thank you.
We'll talk about a couple legal definitions. One for sex trafficking is exchanging sexual services for any form of compensation. And that could be a place to stay. It does not have to be money. It can be drugs. It can be a place to stay. It can be food.
Might be food, right.
Mm-hmm. Right. And then the federal definition of sex trafficking is that commercial sex act being induced by force, fraud, or coercion, except if the victim is under the age of 18, then this automatically falls into the federal definition. And we recently changed the state law with the help of First Lady Parnell to reflect anyone under the age of 21. So you need, not every case is a sex trafficking case. You can have an adult female who is not being forced, is not being pressured into doing it. She is basically doing it on her own. That would be an example of prostitution, but not sex trafficking. You have to have that either underage, force, fraud, or coercion for it to be sex trafficking. And coercion can be something as subtle as, and we see this a lot with foreign-born victims, I know where your family lives in Thailand. You know, I know where they are. You know, we have people, that could be a form of coercion. It can be implied. It does not have to be direct coercion.
Well, that's a really interesting scenario that I hadn't considered before. When you think about young people coming in from rural Alaska, getting tricked into mm-hmm. being getting involved in this terrible life. And then I think that a logical question for a lot of folks would be like,
why doesn't she just
why
leave?
Don't you just get out? Why don't you go get help? But who thinks about perhaps threats against the family? How often is that happening?
Deeper than that, though. And we get asked that a lot. Why don't they just leave? They're not being, you know, chained to the bed. Why don't they leave? Well, they don't feel like they can leave. It's very much, it's been referred to as a trauma bond between the victim and the trafficker. It's like Stockholm syndrome, domestic violence. It's a very complicated relationship. They don't feel like they can leave. A very simple thing that traffickers do oftentimes is take a woman's driver's license or her ID, foreign-born, take their passport. I've talked to more women who, well, he had my ID. I couldn't leave. They don't think they can. They don't think they can do any better. They don't know where to go. The trafficker has told them, "Go tell the police. You're the one that's going to be arrested."
Which is true.
I'll tell everybody in the village what you've been doing. I'll tell everybody you're a prostitute. So you've got that shame and humiliation. You've got no. And keep in mind, these women have had a chaotic lifestyle. They're not like you and I. They don't have a driver's license. They don't have a car. They don't have a steady place to live. So it's they don't think that they can leave. It's a psychological barrier more than a physical barrier.
And possibly came from an early life where they weren't given a lot of support or
exactly.
a lot of help with their self-esteem. So it was sort of an easy pathway.
Exactly.
Glenn, you were talking about having this discussion with your son.
Right.
And one of the things that I am curious about from both your professional perspectives is, how important is it to have things like the governor's Choose Respect campaign? Do these types of things really help? Do they make a difference if people are marching in parades and using that phrase, Choose Respect? We know that the governor feels very strongly about this. He's talked mm-hmm. about it quite a bit. But how much impact does a campaign like this have? It seems to me that if it were as simple as telling a predator to choose respect and that would change things, that'd be great. But we know that it's not. Does it help?
I think that anytime you can force dialogue, you get people talking about an issue, it's helpful. And I also look at domestic violence. You know, when I started at APD, you know, there would be domestic violence and we'd walk away. Okay, you two, keep your hands off each other, and we turn around and walk away. We don't, you know, it's not like that at all anymore. It's a mandatory arrest. It's a lot of things like that. Just take that. It's like turning around an ocean liner. It just takes people to start talking about it, thinking about it. Okay, we're going to look at prostitution in a different way. We're going to look at domestic violence, sex assault in a different way. I think that's what these things help do. They start, the more you talk about it, the more you open that dialogue, you get people thinking about it. You get men thinking about, well, maybe I shouldn't do that.
Yeah, it's a cultural thing, and cultural changes take a long time. But it does. It comes with little things. I mean, one can say, all right, you have this big program, or the state's doing this, the governor's doing this. That's all part of it. And don't look for the easy button. That's where it begins. I like to look back, and now I see where Mothers Against Drunk Driving. Our culture has changed when it comes to drunk driving and having, you know, I had a conversation not too long ago with some young people that wasn't even a question, and who was going to drive, and that was already a plan. When I went to college, that wasn't even discussed. We've seen a cultural change, but it wasn't one thing. It took time, and so this will also take time.
And so maybe what we're talking about is the Choose Respect campaign and other things like that need to be highly visible and in place to really, it sounds like it needs to affect the youngest of our population coming forward. I mean, clearly you're not going to change the mind of an adult deviant by saying, hey, choose respect.
Right.
But maybe if you start with kindergarten kids
right.
and
exactly.
have a program in place there, is that what we're looking at?
Yeah, I've had these discussions about putting some of these programs in the schools when the kids, we've got to start talking about to our kids about sexual exploitation at a much earlier age, because I guarantee you the traffickers are talking to them. We've got to have our voice in there saying, how do you want to portray yourself? How do you want to dress? How do you want to think about these things? We need to start that dialogue at a much earlier age than we are.
Yeah, because your kids are online, they're chatting,
yes.
and they're being approached by sexual folks with talk and wanting to meet within not 72 hours, but 72 minutes of being
yes.
online.
Mm-hmm. We're going to talk a little bit more about that access online, and also we'll take a call from Dennis, who's on the line from Kodiak, when Talk of Alaska continues statewide.
Talk of Alaska comes to you from APRN, the Alaska Public Radio Network, and is made possible with support from ConocoPhillips. The easy oil is gone, and getting to the remaining oil will be a challenge that will require the state and the industry to work together. ConocoPhillips, Alaska's oil and gas company. First National Bank Alaska, helping Alaska's dreams grow since 1922. On the web at fnbalaska.com, an equal housing lender, member FDIC. And by Condor Airlines, offering nonstop service to Frankfurt from Anchorage and Fairbanks between May and September, with connections to most German and European destinations. Details available at condor.com.
Welcome back to Talk of Alaska. I'm Lori Townsend, and we're talking today about the terrible problem in Alaska of sex trafficking, prostitution, and victimization of young people through internet contact and also just runaways who end up on the street and are victimized quite quickly, we're finding out. My guests are Sergeant Kathy Lacey, who's with the VICE unit, the undercover unit with the Anchorage Police Department, and former detective who's retired from APD now but runs Digital Securus, internet system safety security online company. So let's talk a little bit about that aspect of how young people are being victimized. I'm so glad that my sons are grown because I can't imagine, you know, computers were just coming in to classrooms when my kids were in school, and because I'm really old, but it just seems now it's impossible to stop that wave of information and access to things. You can, Glenn, you're in the business of internet security. You can put your kids' computer safety parameters on the computer at home, but you have no, you know, the minute they walk out the door, their friend has a smartphone.
Exactly.
And all, there's access everywhere.
Oh, yeah.
Before we move on to that, though, let's let Dennis in Kodiak come on for just a second and find out what he has to say. Hi, Dennis. Thanks for hanging
on
the line there.
Show. Fantastic show, most attractive, doors and windows wide open. This call represents a handshake to every one of you involved. Not too far off the subject, I'd like to address the statistical survey that recently took place in Kodiak. Are you all familiar with that?
No, I'm not.
No.
Oh, it's the high sexual abuse, which some people weren't too shocked about, but the chairman of the Naive in Kodiak, talk about myself, holy cow, living in paradise has its unfortunate attachment. So my daughter moved up here with me a couple of years ago, and holy cow, you know, uneducated, naive dad, gets her a cell phone, blah, blah, blah. It didn't go as far as it probably could have, but yeah, next thing I know, there were people in my driveway that I didn't know. Anyway, I want to thank you once again. Are any of you familiar with the sexual abuse survey that took place with women in Kodiak?
No, but thanks for bringing it to our attention. Dennis, we'll see what we can find out about that. And with that thought in mind, Dennis talking about his daughter getting a cell phone, and then suddenly there's people you don't know around. I mean, I think that's kind of the horror scenario that parents are facing. And we just started down that conversation. The minute your kid walks out the door, you might have all the safeguards in place that you can imagine at home, and you know at school their computers have lots of filters. But what about the minute they go out and go down to have a malt downtown with one of their friends who has a smartphone?
Well, that's just it. I mean, my poor son has got the most secured network, and I know where he is. I get a text message if he goes to a site that's not approved. I know where his cell phone. I mean, poor kid. And yet, you can have all that. We could set you up with all that. The problem is everybody's looking for that button. That there just isn't an app for this.
Right.
There really isn't.
For good parenting.
Yeah, you just can't. It does. It comes. And Laura, you and I have talked about this before on some of your other shows, that it does come down to the communicating, about knowing what your kids are doing, having those conversations, knowing who their friends are, knowing what's going on, and talking about it, as well as having the rules. Here's what happens when you break the rules. Here's where the boundaries are. I mean, our job as parents to put boundaries, and their job is to see how far they can push them. The technology has just unfortunately made it easier because their boundaries are electronically a lot broader. Just as you said, once they walk out of there, between the coffee shop, between their friends and the Xboxes and the chat rooms and everything else, and so you have to just kind of say, all right, we're not going to be able to have Glenn come in and put all these safeguards on it. It comes down to knowing what your kids are doing, being involved, communicating, setting up those rules, and monitoring, you know, having that that open communication. Again, if I could, you know, my book, Cybercop Guide to Internet Child Safety, is 220 pages long. If there was an easy answer, it would be really a flyer or a one-page handout. But, it's just not.
But you are saying that there are, your son is our example here. You do have the ability to put some parameters, at least on their phones. Is that what you're saying? So that you can kind of check just as you would on their computer at home. So that's kind of a hopeful message for parents that if they at least know they can put safeguards on their child's phone, that may help in some respect. How does that work?
Well, I think the way it works is you have that conversation with your child. You know, the phone is for these reasons. You have a phone because these are the rules. And I need to know your passcode. Not that I'm going to be looking at just as you would say to your child, you have a diary. I'm not going to be looking in your diary unless for some reason you give me cause to look. But being able to know that. And oftentimes I think the kids do, by knowing that they're being watched or that there's the potential, that's where that imaginary boundary is, as opposed to giving your child a phone with full internet and everything else and not even talking about it. What happens? They're going to start looking. They're going to start chatting. They're going to start uploading this program. You know, it's just, you know, where we used to 25 years ago, you know, we'd be hanging out in different places and going to these different stores or whatnot. Now, you know, the world is all open to you.
Well, this has been a really good conversation about a very bad issue, and I wish it were different for the state, and I know that there's a lot of work to do, and it's good that there's good folks such as both of you who are working on these issues. We've been talking today about internet crimes, predators online. We know that that's a very real risk here, and sex trafficking, prostitution, and sex trafficking of young people in Alaska, and there's a lot that parents need to know to keep their kids safe. But I think that the good news is that there are ways that you can. And I think, as we've heard several times today, a lot of that starts with conversation, talking to your young people, letting them know that this threat is real and that they need to keep themselves safe. Thank you so much to my guests today, Sergeant Kathy Lacey with the Anchorage Police Department Vice Unit, and former detective Glenn Klinkhart, who is the CEO of Digital Securus, an internet safety company. Thanks to Dave Waldron and Pat Yak and BD Trantina on the phones. My name is Lori Townsend. Talk of Alaska will be back next Tuesday. Thanks for listening.
Talk of Alaska is made possible by this member station of the Alaska Public Radio Network, by the Pebble Partnership, developing a comprehensive mine plan that meets Alaska's regulatory requirements while supporting sustainable fisheries in Southwest Alaska. PebblePartnership.com. And by Providence Imaging Center, providing diagnostic mammogram results to patients within one working day, led by Drs. Denise Farley and Heather Tauschik. PROVImaging.com.
Increasing energy efficiency is an easy way to reduce energy consumption and save money. The Alaska Housing Finance Corporation now offers financing to publicly owned facilities to make improvements to increase energy efficiency. Find out more about how their loan program works and if there are public buildings in your community that are a good fit for the Alaska Energy Efficiency Revolving Loan Program at ahfc.us. This message sponsored by AHFC.
This program is a production of APRN, which is solely responsible for its content. The views expressed on this program are those of the participants and not necessarily those of APRN, this station, or its underwriters. Today's program is available online at alaskapublic.org. CD copies are available by calling 550-8400.
This is APRN, the Alaska Public Radio Network.